The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Yo, what is going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of the EPA podcast right here on Bleeding Green Nation. As always, I'm your host, Victor Williams. Be sure to follow me on all platforms, Twitter, Instagram, anywhere else you've seen my face. Be sure to follow me over there at the Philly Pod. If you are new to Bleeding Green Nation, appreciate you guys for taking a listen to the feed. Be sure to subscribe on Apple iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere else you get your podcast. Be sure to rate 5 stars and leave those reviews. All of them help with the exposure of Bleeding Green Nation, bring it to more eyes and ears of football fans, NFL fans, Eagles fans alike. Joining me as always, my co-host, you can find him on Twitter at halfandhalf_TPL. He is Shane Half. Shane, we have a win to talk about this week coming off their first loss of the season, 9-1. Not all wins are pretty. This one certainly wasn't, but a W nonetheless. How you feeling, buddy?
Yeah, if there was an ugly win column on the standing sheet, this one would go in there, but there's not. So a win is a win. It could have been prettier. It could have made me feel better. It's kind of the second straight game in a row. There have been some struggles, but unlike a week ago on Monday Night Football, this week the Eagles walk out with the win. So that at least feels good.
Yeah, when we get to the postseason and all and talk about seeding and stuff, nobody's going to care about how you won these games. They're just going to see the number of wins. And that is going to obviously dictate how the Eagles move forward. Now with a 2-game cushion after Dallas took down Minnesota, because they have the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Vikings. So now they have the 1-game advantage plus the tiebreaker, a nice little 2-game cushion for them as far as the NFC is concerned. But yes, the Eagles escape Indianapolis with a 17-16 win over the Colts, thanks to the heroics of Jalen Hurts and him accounting for his 2 touchdowns. 88% of the offensive yardage was all Jalen Hurts, and he had to make some magic happen in the fourth quarter because the Eagles tried as hard as they could to not win this game. You have the A.J. Brown fumble. You have penalties on penalties. You have reserve tight ends trying to make up for Dallas Goedert. There were a lot of things that went wrong in this game, but the Colts did everything they could to hand the Eagles the win, and then the Eagles took it in the end. Shane, just your immediate takeaways from this game. I know it's when we did the post game show to now, some time has passed. But now that we've sat on it for a little bit, how do you feel overall about this team at this point in the season? And are there any overlying concerns that we should zone in on as the Eagles move forward and prepare for a playoff run?
Defensively, what I watched on the All-22 kind of confirmed my thoughts post game. I thought the defense played really well. I thought there were some tweaks to the run defense that showed up in a big way. The coverage was really good behind it. So the defense I thought was really good. The offense is still concerning. There's definitely some questionable game plan things that we'll get into. Overall, I didn't feel like maybe I might have given a little too much heat to Shane Steichen on the post-game show for the offensive game plan.
He didn't get off the hook, that's for sure.
Yeah, he didn't get off the hook, and he shouldn't. There were some issues there, but I did walk away with some concerns about the receivers. Colts played a lot of man coverage, and there was a lot of reps where, watching broadcast, I would have put that on Jalen Hurts got a little skittish in the pocket. Watching the All-22, there was a lot of reps where just nobody was open, and so Hurts had to kind of scramble around and do some things. And so You would like, with AJ Brown and Devonta Smith on your roster, to not have to have Dallas Goedert to be able to beat man coverage, but it did look that way for portions of the game on Sunday.
Yeah, the offense certainly had their struggles. The rushing game, Jalen Hurts kind of went back to his roots. He had the most rushing yards in this game since week one, so he had to make a lot of things happen, especially in the fourth quarter. But you have the AJ Brown fumble. So basically, right, Marcus Epps forces the fumble. TJ Edwards recovers it. I forget, was it Jonathan Taylor? He's moving the pile.
Yeah.
And then Epps eventually strips it. TJ Edwards recovers it. And then AJ Brown gives it right back on the fumble of his own. So two uncharacteristic fumbles 2 weeks in a row for the Eagles receivers. The Quez botch last week, and now you have AJ Brown doing what he did this week. So now the Colts are driving, right? And they're within scoring range. And Shane, correct me if I'm wrong, but if the Colts score there and make it 20-10, the game's essentially over at that point. Hassan Reddick comes up with the big sack, forces the Colts to settle for a field goal. There was a face mask. We talked about it a bit on post game. That face mask that I'm sure was a makeup call for not getting one that landed Dallas Goedert on IR last week. But you get the face mask call, or you don't get it, rather. You get the sack, 16-10. And then it's all up to Jalen Hurts at that point. Obviously, he makes it happen down the stretch with some weird shenanigans along the way. You have the Miles Sanders penalty. He got leveled on that like 39-yard bomb that drew the PI penalty. And then you have five straight runs, three of them to Boston Scott. He's had two carries put together over the last 2 weeks. And then for whatever reason, Sirianni and Steichen decided, let's give it to him three straight times in crunch time and see how that works out. So all of that culminates into the 2-minute warning and the fake QB sneak and all this other stuff. Hurts eventually gets the draw to take it into the end zone. But what was going on with that final drive? Because they did kind of like back their way into the end zone on that drive. It wasn't like a definitive, like, you know, fourth quarter, 2-minute drill. It was a lot of weird, fluky stuff that culminated in Hurts, obviously, putting the team on his back.
It was, yeah. To go back to the Hassan Reddick sack, that sack is huge because I truly believe that's four down territory for the Colts when they've got third and goal at the five. If you don't get in, if it's fourth and goal from the five, I think you go for it there. What does a field goal get you? It doesn't really get you that much. It doesn't put you up a touchdown. But that sack, when all of a sudden it's fourth and goal from the 20, you're kicking the field goal. So that was huge from Reddick. And then, yeah, that Eagles drive was weird. First three plays were pass plays, and then they didn't pass the ball again. It was strange. You have the three straight runs with Boston Scott in the red zone when he hadn't had a carry that far, thus far in the game. third and two. So that third and two, I'm in the middle of doing a Jalen Hurts passing review video from this game, and I just recorded this play. I haven't got it all pieced together to post yet, but they motion Miles Sanders across the formation to create a 4-by-1 set, and his primary read is AJ Brown on a curl route. It's third and two, you know, and it's covered. And so he comes across the formation to his tight end that's on a curl route that's not open, to his receiver that's on a post route that's not open. And he comes to the fourth read. Miles Sanders on the wheel route is the fifth read on this route. And after the fourth read, he starts to move around in the pocket. And there's no pressure. And Miles Sanders is wide open. Now, you don't often expect a quarterback to get to his fifth read on a play. And there's that internal clock playing a part there. But man, if he would have just come off of that to the fifth read, that's a touchdown on that play to Miles Sanders. And he gets skittish in the pocket. I'm not sure why, other than just internal clock. And eventually he comes to it and he underthrows it and the Eagles get lucky. I don't know what, I think it was Zaire Franklin. I don't know what he was thinking on that play. the broadcast was like, oh, he saved a touchdown. I was like, no, he didn't. Like that.
I don't think that was the case.
Never going to get completed, but bails the Eagles out on that one. You would like to see Hurts come to that read and get the ball out. He doesn't, but it doesn't end up mattering. But it was just a weird drive there were strange coaching decisions in this game. You mentioned the fake sneak on fourth and two. What are we doing here?
But there's no way they know. The Colts have to know. As good, as effective as the Eagles are on QB sneaks, they have to know. There's no way they're gonna snap this and expect to get 2 yards. So
yeah,
and I guess Sirianni thought we can scare them into jumping offsides, maybe. But
the bigger issue is you have to take a timeout to get out of that. Like, it'd be one thing if you had
right that after a 2 minute warning. You just discussed this.
It'd be one thing if you had personnel on the field that you could just shift your look when they don't jump and then run a play. But right. by calling that timeout, you're saying if we don't convert on fourth down, we will not get the ball back. That's putting a lot. That's putting a lot of confidence in your ability to draw somebody off sides or convert on fourth down. So I didn't like that. I did, however, really like that the Jalen Hurts touchdown run. That's the easiest game winning touchdown you'll ever see, where they pulled Fletcher, or not Fletcher Cox. They pulled Jason Kelce across the formation, and Bobby Okereke just, he follows him. He thinks it's a run play to the outside, and Hurts, you never seen an opening that wide in the red zone for the QB, just a high step into the end zone. So the Eagles get the win. Was not pretty on offense. The offense, they fumbled two times, and they only had three drives with more than two first downs. So you don't feel confident about the place the offense is in right now, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. If there was more like the Colts handed the Eagles the win in that case, because on the touchdown run, we saw the I don't know if you caught the Orlovsky breakdown of that, where how basically the linebackers, one was focused on Kelce because they assume, you know, you're taught basically wherever the center is, the ball is going. So,
right.
So the linebacker follows Kelce, and then the other linebacker or corner, I forget who the defender was, he follows Jack Stahl, who is essentially on the other side. And once both guys are occupied, there's no other guy to contain Jalen Hurts. And like you said, the easiest game winning touchdown he's probably ever going to get in his career, other than a QB sneak. But the final drive is interesting because I've seen takes about how the limited passing opportunities shows how the Eagles feel about Jalen Hurts as a passer. And I was like, I don't know if that's the case, if they're not confident enough in Hurts' throwing ability to have them throw them into scoring range to win this game. So that's why they called the two running plays to Miles Sanders, then the two to Boston Scott, and then Hurts took it from there. What do you make of the Eagles being very run heavy down the stretch to try and win that game?
I'm going to chalk that up to just one of the strange coaching decisions too.
So it's not Hurts' talent. It's not reflective of Hurts' talent as a quarterback, right?
No. I don't think so. I mean, Hurts had some really good throws in this game. He ends 19 to 25. I think he was good throwing the ball. I don't know if, you know, they were struggling to uncover against man. I don't know if some of that goes into it. Like, they weren't trying to run the clock. I saw people saying they were trying to run the clock. They were up tempoing, snapping with 20 seconds left. If you're trying to run the clock, you're not going to do that. I don't really know what the, I don't know what the idea was behind that. I don't think it's that you don't trust Hurts. But for some reason they chose to run the ball not almost exclusively after those first three plays, when the run game had not been working so far. And maybe you look at, they had an RPO that Hurts should have given, that he pulled it and they end up throwing the ball away. You've got the one where he misses Miles Sanders. So maybe off the back of two, what you could call QB mistakes, they just felt like they needed to run the ball. I don't really know what to make of that, other than to say it was strange and really inconsistent with any of the narratives I've seen out there. They're not trying to run the clock. That's obvious.
I just don't know
what to make of that.
Yeah, that is strange. Well, people shouldn't say it is because of Jalen Hurts' lack of talent. Jalen Hurts in this game, 18 of 25, 190 yards. The passing touchdown to Quez Watkins. Quez making up for his blunder last week with a he beat Kenny Moore, who's, people tried to tell me that Kenny Moore has been cooked for 2 years. I thought he was one of the top slot defenders in the league. You, as the film guy, obviously can tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's like, is he not a top five slot defender in the NFL anymore? Is he falling off? I thought he was up there.
Yeah, Kenny Moore's a good player, I think.
That's what I thought. Quez blowing by him. Everybody was like, oh, it's only Kenny Moore. I'm like, he's a top nickel cornerback. So I thought.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't call Kenny Moore cooked. He might not be at the level that he once was, but I think Kenny Moore's a good player. And that was a good route by Quez.
Yeah, very good. Blew right by him and just a dot from Jalen Hurts. His timing, if anything, his timing on throws, like to A.J. Brown as slants, that's when you see it the most. His timing on throws has astronomical difference, the contrast from this year to last season. But 107.1 passer rating in this game, and the 16 carries for 86 yards. Like I mentioned prior, the most since week one in that victory over Detroit. He had 90 yards. In that game, it was up Sirianni, Steichen, and Hurts basically told Jalen Hurts, I think this was the game plan coming out of last game. Like, we're going to put the ball more in your court this week. Hurts accounted for 88% of the total yards. Eagles had 314. Hurts accounted for 276 of those yards. So MVP-like stuff from Jalen Hurts. He probably was the MVP leader for maybe 4 hours before Pat Mahomes did what he did on Sunday night. So at the end of the day, I don't think Hurts is going to have the stats to really compete with Mahomes, but he's certainly in that MVP conversation. Shane, on the post game, we talked about the tight ends and kind of somewhat being vindicated on our prior desires for ones at the deadline. We didn't get them, and now we have Grant Calcaterra trying to block people. He's getting caught for holding penalties because it's not his strong suit. The three tight ends as a whole combined for one catch for 7 yards. What are we going to do about the tight end position? Is there any hope for this group until Dallas Goedert comes back?
No, I mean, not in the short term. Grant Calcaterra, he's a project player. That's why you took him on day three. He's not ready yet.
That's why he's a 6th-round pick.
Yeah, he's not ready yet. Jack Stoll is just not a good football player. He can block a little bit, but he's just not a receiving threat. I think your best chance is for Tyree Jackson to just come out of nowhere, and I don't think that's going to happen either. So
he had a penalty himself, I think.
Yeah, he did. I would love to see him go more 4-wide receiver and spread things out while they wait on Goddard to get back. I don't know that they're going to do that. They ran a lot of 11 personnel in this game. They like to keep their tight ends on the field.
All three of them.
Yeah, I think Stoll played like 81% of the snaps. So yeah. I don't think the tight end is going anywhere, and I don't think these tight ends are going anywhere. So I guess we could take that both ways, but I don't expect a lot of production out of tight end until Dallas Goedert comes back.
Yeah, Jack Stoll is clearly the tight end one. He led the snaps by a wide margin on Sunday. So I see this is another take. I want to hit on the receivers real quick. I see some people saying, of course this is on the internet, that Devontae Smith has taken a step back this year. I don't think that's the case. He's not getting as many deep looks, in my opinion. But what do you make of Devontae Smith thus far into the season? He led the team in snaps, receptions, and yards last week. So he's one of the beneficiaries of Dallas Goedert going down. But what do you make of Devontae Smith in these last few weeks?
Yeah, Smith's been fine. I guess you could maybe say it's a disappointing year in terms of people thinking he would have more production. I actually thought, you know, preseason, I said that I thought that he would have more yardage than A.J. Brown this season. I thought A.J. Brown would draw a lot of extra attention.
I said that. So, I said Devontae would have more yards and A.J. would have more touchdowns. That was my take before the season.
Yeah, that's where I was at as well. And so if that was your expectation, you could call it a disappointing season if you're playing fantasy football with it. But in terms of him taking a step back, he hasn't. He's still putting out, you know, he still runs really good routes. He's got good hands. He's done the things that he's showing, the things he showed last year. He's just not wide receiver one. Or I guess not even that. He's still kind of splitting. I think he's probably clearly wide receiver two behind A.J. Brown in terms of the pecking order. But last year, he was it. He was the only receiver you had. And this year, he's not. Mm-hmm. So his production's taken a dip, but his play hasn't fallen off.
Yeah, Jalen Rager last year. Don't slight that. But yeah, I think Smitty has been perfectly fine. Obviously, when you add a guy like A.J. Brown, your role diminishes to an extent, but Smitty's never a guy that's going to complain about his numbers. He's good in the role that he's in. I'm glad that Quez was utilized more, a bit more in the offense. People are trying to say like, Odell, Quez is like not good anymore. I'm like, he just doesn't get, his role isn't as big as it was last year. So his talent isn't on display, but very good route by him on that touchdown that pulled the Eagles to within 3 in the fourth quarter. This comeback was the Eagles, I believe it was their first fourth quarter double digit comeback since Miracle at the Meadowlands, right? From 2010, the largest comeback. And is this Hurts' first game winning drive? Is it technically?
Or did he have another? I'm not sure on that, but
it might have been. I know there were some close ones last, that throw to Quez last week was all but a game winning throw, but you know, we know how that ended. Before we hit on some defensive notes, because there's a lot of praise to go around defensively, any other things you want to fire off as far as the offense? I think we kind of hit on everything. Good game by Hurts, obviously carry the offense. Not much to speak of as far as the running game is concerned. Do you want to take a look at Daryl Henderson? He was released yesterday. Obviously, Melvin Gordon's probably not a good bet there with all his fumbling woes. But Henderson's out there. What do you make of the running backs?
I mean, I'd give anybody a shot to come take a job from Boston Scott or Kenny Gainwell, but
Austin Scott's the kick returner now, dude.
Yeah. Trey Sermon's the guy. The second best running back on this team is a game day and active every week. So I've wanted to see Sermon for a while. I don't think they're going to make any sort of move. I think if they were, they would have put in a claim, but I don't see that. But I will say one other note on the offense, though. So Jalen Hurts now is third in QB rushing touchdowns in his first three seasons in the NFL at 21. So he trails Josh Allen, who had 25, and Cam Newton, mm-hmm. who had 28. So he's got seven games to go. So with one touchdown a game, he could tie Cam Newton's rushing touchdowns in his first three seasons. Although notably, he would have played 36 games versus Cam Newton playing 48. So if you ever wondered, you know, what sort of rushing production Hurts puts up historically, like he's on pace to tie that record playing 12 less games. So incredible stuff there from him.
Yes, and despite what people may believe, they were saying this a lot before the season, the rushing attack is not a detriment to the offense. It is an additional weapon, and Hurts likes to call himself a triple threat rather than a dual threat. He has said he has his passing, his rushing, and he has his mental. You know what I realized now that like we watch as much film as we do, and this has always been the case, but I realize a lot more as I try to dissect Jalen Hurts. Do you know how smart you have to be just to like run an offense?
Oh yeah.
Like the things you have to memorize and like understand and like comprehend. And then on top of that, you have to go out there and execute it at a high level. There's a reason why there's only 32 of these jobs in the NFL. And you could argue that 6 to 7 of the guys in the league right now probably shouldn't have those jobs. Zach Wilson just got benched for whatever reason. So that's a whole nother thing. But when you sit and watch it, us as content creators just trying to understand the concept so that we can create half decent content, and then like these people have to go out there and do it, and did this while they get paid millions. It is just wild to understand.
I watch a play like that the one I was just talking about, the underthrow to Miles Sanders, where Sanders is the fifth guy in the progression. I watched that play like 12 times to sketch out the routes and get the progressions down and what the coverage is doing. And Hurts has one shot at that, and he's got 3 seconds to do it. Well, 300-pound guys are trying to kill him. So it's impressive the way, and of course he knows what the play is on the front end, but it's impressive just how they're able to process all that stuff.
Or even on situations where like, say like the radio doesn't come into like the helmet and you have to like figure it out on your own. Like, and you have to make sure the whole offense and the offensive line knows what's going on. And it is a lot. Speaking of that, what's been going on these last few weeks with Kelsey's snaps? One over the head last week, one win early against Washington, hit Hurts in the chest. He didn't see that coming. What is what do you think's going on there?
I have no idea, but I hope they figure it out.
I know if you see some cadences in the film or something, I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, it's happened some early in the season too. They had a couple fumbles off of snaps. I don't know. Maybe Jason Kelsey is trying to do the Eagles a solid and inflate Hurts fumble count so they can talk him down in contract negotiations. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
But it has been an issue some throughout the year, and it hasn't really cost him big yet. I guess it cost him a fumble. I think it was against the Commanders, but I don't know. Hopefully that gets smoothed out.
Yeah, fun fact about Jason Kelsey, this Sunday, he will, if, you know, God forbid, you know, anything happens, but as long as he suits up this Sunday, he will break Chuck Begnarit's 60-year-long record of 132 consecutive starts. If Kelsey suits up for his 133rd, he will break that record for the most consecutive starts in Eagles history. Chuck was the last one to do it from 1941 to 1960, or 1949 to 1962. So there you go. There's some Eagles history for Jason Kelsey, shoo-in Hall of Famer. He's 133 consecutive games. The last one he missed was week 7 of the 2014 season.
It's crazy.
That is a long time. That's a long time to be playing football, man, at a high level at 35 years old. Speaking of 35-year-olds, one joined the team last week, literally on Thursday, and made a heck of an impact along with Linval, Joseph, and Ndamukong Suh, and Joseph combined for 7 tackles, 2 QB hits, and a sack against the Colts, and stuffed the run, of course, after that blasphemous first drive with whatever Gannon was trying to do. They got their feet underneath them, held Jonathan Taylor to just 2.3 yards per carry after that first drive. Joseph and Suh look like they can still play at a decent level, and it'll only, you know, be better once Jordan Davis comes back into the mix. Shane, what did you make of the Eagles' debuts of the two guys that have been with this team for all of 4 and 5 days prior to that game?
Yeah, so let's start with the first drive.
Do we have to?
Real quick. So Gannon tried to roll out the same offense, the odd fronts, nickel personnel, and just insert Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh in the middle, and we'll see if that'll fix the defense. Well, it did. Jonathan Taylor rushed for 49 yards on the opening drive. So they may, and this is what I talked about in that Twitter thread, that plugging those guys in would not fix the defense. There was going to have to be some schematic changes that happened.
That, this is what you said prior to that game, like when the signing happened, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember you fighting the good fight.
I had a Twitter thread just talking about Linval Joseph and the Chargers defense, and people were trying to tag me on that afterwards and be like, how'd that work out? And I was like, literally exactly like I said. They tried to insert them, and it didn't work, and then they made some schematic adjustments after that. They didn't stop playing nickel. They started run blitzing a lot on early downs, particularly Josiah Scott firing through, like, C-gaps. You had Chauncey Gardner-Johnson coming through a B gap on one. They started to run blitz a lot. And people look at this game and they say the Eagles played the run better than they did against the Commanders. They actually allowed more yards per carry than they did against the Commanders, 3.8 versus 3.1. Mm-hmm. The reason it feels better is because there was a number of times you were stacking those guys up at the line of scrimmage. Against the Commanders, it was consistently 3 yards every play, which is fine if you can get off the field in third and short situations, and the Eagles couldn't. Here they were selling out. They were run blitzing more. They're getting tackles for loss. They're getting stops for no gain. Now they gave up some rushes too, but that doesn't feel so bad when sometimes you're getting into second and 12 and now you can get your pass rush sets on the field. And so we saw more aggression out of Jonathan Gannon, and a lot of it came from run blitzing. And, you know, after the opening drive, the defense only allowed 20 yards per drive the rest of the game. They gave up 9 points, and 6 of them came on short fields after offensive turnovers. So really good performance by the defense, I think. They pressured Matt Ryan on 44% of his dropbacks, 20 pressures. They sacked him 4 times. 3 of those sacks came on plays where they did not blitz. I put this stat out on Twitter, too, that people complain about Gannon not blitzing, but the Eagles ranked 13th in the league in blitz rate at 27%. Doesn't feel like it, but he doesn't want to blitz. He's hesitant to blitz. The Eagles come out the opening drive on a 3rd and 6, first third down of the game, and they send a blitz, and they get a guy in, a free runner, but it's still a completion. Ryan gets the ball out, and it turns into a 20-yard gain. And when that happens, you're going to be hesitant to blitz. Now, he dialed some up in good situations at the end of the game, but the Eagles are so good at getting pressure without blitzing. They're number 2 in the league in ESPN's pass rush win rate. They've got 3 guys in the top 10 at their position. Josh Sweat and Hassan Reddick are 3 and 6 respectively. Javon Hargrave is 4th for defensive tackle. So they can get after the quarterback without blitzing. And it's what they did on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the floor, because this is your favorite stat you like to bring up, and I thought it was going to come up in this instance. For the people that, because it's the running joke on Twitter, and I've been one of the people to make this joke, for the people that make the joke that all these new additions and edge rushers drop back into coverage and Gannon loves to throw the defensive line into coverage, what is the updated stat for guys like Hassan Reddick and all these other guys that people claim are in pass coverage all the time? What is the updated stat for the number of snaps these players have played in pass coverage? If you have
it. I will have it in just a second. I got to scroll through it here. Okay, here we go.
I know that's your favorite
stat.
Yeah,
so people complain. These are the 2 complaints about Gannon's defense nonstop. He doesn't blitz. The Eagles are above average in terms of blitz rate in the NFL. The other one is people love to complain about the Eagles dropping Josh Sweat into coverage, Brandon Graham into coverage, whatever. So Brandon Graham has dropped into coverage on 5.1% of his pass rushing snaps. Robert Quinn, 2.1%. Josh Sweat, 3.6%. Hassan Reddick is the highest number at 13.6%. Because he's playing linebacker, so he's going to have to sometimes. In the times he's dropped, he's allowed 4 receptions and he's got 2 pass breakups. So he doesn't do that. It's notable when it happens. You notice it because you notice. Because
it's bad when it happens. You see Robert Quinn out there.
Yeah, you notice, defender. Robert Quinn has no idea what he's doing dropping into coverage. Well, he does it 2% of the time, but you got to do it a little bit for predictability reasons. But yeah, people are looking for nits to pick with that one.
Yeah, it's just funny when you bring it up, because I always laugh because I make those jokes a lot. I had said I cannot wait to see 330-pound Linval Joseph in pass coverage, because it's funny. It might work because he has the wingspan, but
distinctively remember it. I think it was last year, and Ndamukong Suh dropping into coverage and getting a pass breakup for the Bucks.
Hey! When it works, it works. to your point, yeah, Gannon is hesitant to blitz. It's been even more so the case without Jordan Davis because you don't have that guy up in the middle taking up two defenders at once. So when you don't have the Jordan Davis obviously taking up two defenders over the middle, it's going to be necessary for Gannon to use an additional defender to try and blitz without him there. That's why he's been as hesitant. So I've been one of the Jonathan Gannon, I don't want to say supporters, but I think he's gotten a lot of flack. But without the defense, the score probably is much worse, and the game is probably out of hand way before the fourth quarter. You mentioned the four sacks by Matt Ryan. They held Indianapolis to just the opening drive touchdown, no more touchdowns for the rest of the game. They had the goal line stand in the fourth quarter and held the Colts to that field goal after Hurts was strip sacked on his own 22-yard line. That should have been a score from there. We were like, oh man, this is the game. And the Eagles did their part as far as the defense is concerned. So very encouraging things from Philadelphia's defense. We mentioned also on the post show, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson led the team with 10 tackles. I feel like with each passing week, he's becoming more and more physical. He's getting more acclimated with the defense. And for a guy his size, he hits pretty hard. We mentioned that we thought a penalty was coming on that one hit. I say it week in and week out that Gardner Johnson is probably the first guy that's getting paid. You know, if it's not going to be in the middle of the season, it'll definitely be in the off season. Your updated impressions of Chauncey Gardner Johnson, because we used to make the running joke you have to be a good safety to be in the right place to get these interceptions. Unfortunately, his interception streak has come to an end this week, but a solid performance for him all around versus Indianapolis.
Yeah, I blame Marcus Epps. If Marcus Epps had not stripped that ball, Chauncey was about to get his interception. I could feel it in my bones. He's gotten tremendously better from the beginning of the season. You know, he's learning a new position. Regardless of if he wanted to call himself a safety at the trade time, he was not. He'd never played safety. He played like four snaps in his career at safety. And so he's been thrown into the fire, and it was rough early. I think he's carried through that, and he's playing really good football right now. So that's good to see. He still has some liabilities as a tackler. He's going to hit you hard. He might not bring you down, but he's been known to miss a few tackles. But overall, I think he's played really well. And Marcus Epps as well has played really well. I think he under the radar because Chauncey gets all of the hype with the interceptions. But Marcus Epps has had a really solid season too. So safety looked really dire for the Eagles early in this offseason. And it's become, I don't know if I would say a strength of the team, but it's been a very good part of the team.
Yeah, it's been, when you think of the safeties in general, because Marcus Epps has stepped into, he's transitioned well into a full-time role. That was a big question in the offseason. You got both of these safeties that are looking to get paid. And then we have the long-running question of who's going to be the ones they keep around. It's starting to wonder who doesn't stick around at this point with the way that has been playing. And CJ, I don't know if you saw the clip that was running around the internet yesterday, Shane, with Sirianni and what he said to the Eagles fans, you know, sticking up for Frank Reich. But once he did that, and when he came off, you know, when he walked back to the sideline, CJ Gardner-Johnson was the first man there to like hug him and all this. So he's embracing Philly, and it's looking like that he's going to be a cornerstone for at least the defense for the foreseeable future. The Eagles are now 9-1 for the sixth time in franchise history. They have either won or made it to the Super Bowl in all five instances. In 1949, they won the NFL championship. It was at that time. 1960, they won the championship. 1980, they made the Super Bowl, lost to the Raiders. 2004, obviously made it, lost to the Patriots. In 2017, when they won it all. So hopefully history repeats itself this sixth time and they can get themselves to the big dance. Any other points you want to hit on as far as the Colts are concerned before we go for a break and come back to preview the Packers game?
I think that's it for me.
I had enough of this game. Do you think Fletcher Cox isn't as tired this time around? He was pretty winded after that last game. Yo, that first drive, Linval Joseph, I thought was going to die. He was huffing, puffing. I was like, yo, this man is not in game shape. I give him credit for getting prepared. And obviously he got better as the game went on. But boy, it looked like it took a minute for him to get his legs underneath him.
Yeah, Fletcher Cox, man, you hate to see an Eagles legend go out the way that Jason Peters did, the way that Fletcher Cox is trending towards. He's just a non-factor in the game. He just doesn't. He's not the player that he used to be, and it sucks to watch that, but he's just not. Hopefully they can, as Jordan Davis comes back, and with Sue and Joseph and these guys, they can rotate them enough that maybe he can give you something in a playoff run. Maybe he can get the Brandon Graham strip sack or something and ride off into the sunset. But it's been a rough season for Cox, and he's looked rough the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's not been great. One more last thing I just thought of before we go to break. Robert Quinn I believe 10 snaps in this game. I thought I had said on my podcast the other day that I thought this was going to be like a Chris Long as signing. It's been more of a Ryan Kerrigan thing since he's been in Philadelphia. What do you think's going on there? Is it just a slow grind to learn the defense? But the fact that Linval Joseph and Sue, obviously different positions, but the fact that they've both made more of an impact in the couple days they've been here, you traded a fourth for Robert Quinn. You got to use him. You got to do something with him. What's the situation there?
Yeah, I don't know if he's just been really bad in practices, and so they're not putting him on the field, or if they just viewed him as depth protecting against an injury. But it's not what I expected when they traded a fourth round pick for him. I thought that he would probably be more involved in the rotation, and he just hasn't been. And when he's been on the field, it hasn't been great. So I don't know if the idea from the beginning was just injury protection, or if the idea from the beginning was get him into the rotation, and it just hasn't worked well. But again, hopefully he can kind of string it together too. The Eagles have a lot of talent on the defensive line, so they can buy time, but you would love for, you know, that Chris Long role to be filled more so than the Ryan Kerrigan one.
Yeah, definitely don't want that. Ryan Kerrigan wasn't even like, we didn't know he was on the roster until the playoff game. I think he had a sack or two in that Tampa game. It didn't matter, obviously, but I was like, oh, he can still play a little bit. All right, that wraps up the recap of the Colts game. Eagles sit at 9-1 following their 17-16 victory and come back home to face Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers this Sunday night. We're going to head to a quick break and then come back to preview that game. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to stay tuned right here to the EPA podcast on Bleeding Green Nation.
And we are back here on the EPA podcast. Just finished talking Eagles Colts. We're going to get into the Eagles and Packers on Sunday Night Football, previewing that matchup. But before we can even get into the matchup, Victor, the black helmets, the all black uniforms. Yeah? It's the first time we're going to see it. What are your thoughts on the uniform combination?
I always like the blackouts. I think they're always a sleek look. I know some people are indifferent about the black helmets because in certain lighting, it doesn't look too different than the midnight green, but I'm intrigued to see how it looks. I personally wanted to debut it against Dallas, but I guess it's not too bad going against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers with them on. But I've always loved the all black looks. They're my favorite jerseys. My actually hot take, I have a really hot take. I actually think midnight green is better than Kelly Green. I know that's not a popular take, but everybody wants the Kelly Green, and I can't wait for Kelly Green. I personally don't understand the infatuation with it, because what did we win in Kelly Green? We didn't win anything in Kelly Green. Why do we? But I get it. It's like the Sixers and the Blacks. I love those. So I get it for the nostalgia aspect of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just don't have the nostalgia with Kelly Green. That was before my time. So
yeah, it wasn't my era. So maybe for the generation before us.
I love the old school logo with the eagle and the football. I really like that logo. I've always thought that was really cool. So,
oh, the green eagle with the, yeah, that's dope. That's dope. I'm not saying I hate it. I'm just saying like midnight green is a dope color. Why does everybody want Kelly so bad? Anything's better than the mustard yellow and the baby blue that we wore one time.
I like the black helmets, man. I'm not a huge fan of the whole like monochromatic look that everybody's going with, like the solid white for the Bengals. Like, yeah. Mix it up here though. Like, my ideal uniform combination would be the black pants, the Kelly green top, and then the black helmet. Mm-hmm. I think that would look really cool, but nobody asked me. So there you go.
I want to see the return of the midnight green jerseys with the midnight green pants. I want it all green. I want to see the return of that. So I used to play that combination in like Madden, like back in the day. I hate the white jersey. I don't hate it, but like the white jersey and the green pants is just so like plain. I'm like, we need to spice it up. I wonder how everything's going to look next year when they, you know, update the word mark. I think 2024 is when they update the word mark, like this new one on jerseys. I guess we'll see how that looks. But yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the Packers. The Packers are not a good football team. but they do have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, who has not been a good quarterback this year. But you always wonder if Aaron Rodgers is going to be able to just flip a switch. And, you know, Christian Watson, who looked really bad over the first several weeks of the season, suddenly has five touchdowns in the last two weeks. And so the Packers are maybe beginning to find their footing. I don't know if I'm ready to say that, but if Aaron Rodgers has confidence in one of his receivers, it could be problematic. They are the 14th overall DVOA team. They're 9th in offensive DVOA and 20th in defensive DVOA. The most notable things is they have a really good run offense, which maybe the Eagles have that issue fixed, and they have a really bad run defense. So this could be a very run-heavy game on both sides of the ball on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think so, especially with the I don't know if you've seen it. There's like rumors or like initial reports of like Rodgers and like a thumb thing going on. Like he has a thumb injury of some sort. I'm seeing rumors of that. I haven't checked before this, but I remember last week like his hand was bothering him. But regardless, yeah, Aaron Jones has been a problem this year, especially with the lack of receiver talent. Pass catchers, who do you think is the leading receiver for? I don't know if you've looked at it, but who do you think is the leading receiver currently for the Packers?
Is it the running back?
Oh, that would be depressing. No, it's Alan Lazard. So he has 529 yards. He's missed some time, but he came back. The tight end Robert Tonyan is at 342 yards. Then you have Randall Cobb, who Aaron Rodgers, you know, whined and complained for. He wanted him back, so he's here, 330 yards. The other rookie, Romeo Doubs, he's been one of Rodgers' favorite targets as of late, but he is injured. And then Aaron Jones, Christian Watson, Sammy Watkins are all in the mix. But to your point, Christian Watson, has it five touchdowns in the last 2 weeks? It is.
Yeah, five touchdowns in the last two games.
He is coming into his own. He's a guy I really, really liked. He's a guy I really, really liked out of North Dakota. I did a lot of film study on him because Aaron Moorhead with the Eagles did some workouts with him. So I thought he was a potential option to pair with Devontae Smith. Rare combination of speed and size. I like what he can do, and he's now breaking out into the league. So I'm happy for him on that front. Rushing, as far as the rushing is concerned, Aaron Jones leads the way, 778 yards. AJ Dillon right behind him at nearly 500 yards. So a very good 1-2 punch as far as the running backs are concerned. AJ Dillon is the more physical guy. Aaron Jones is the more finesse guy. AJ Dillon is running at you hard at 250 pounds. So we got these big boys, these big beefy men in the middle of the defensive line just in time.
Yeah, they love to run the ball. And even if you stack the box, they're going to run it anyways. They run into a stacked box on 34% of their plays, which is seventh highest in the league. So they want to establish the run. Like we mentioned, they've had a good rushing attack. And then when they throw the ball, it seems like it's one of two things. So first of all, they're very RPO and screen heavy. Third in the league in RPOs, second in screens. So Rodgers gets the ball out fast and he gets it out into space, or he's pushing the ball downfield. So that feels like a bad matchup to me for the Eagles defense, who we know prior to last week, they've struggled to stop the run. Hopefully they got that figured out. But then when they start running RPOs, when they start throwing screens, the Eagles don't typically get up and press on the line of scrimmage. They're playing off coverage. And if about the time you would get tempted to come up, well, Aaron Rodgers loves to push the ball deep, and he seems to have found that rapport with Christian Watson at running behind defenses lately. So it does strike me as a matchup that could be problematic for the Eagles defense. And maybe I'm just giving the Aaron Rodgers name more credit than it deserves at this point, because he has not been very good this season. But you never know which Rodgers is going to show up. And so I think that's always concerning when you go against the Packers.
Yeah, you still have to be like, you know, aware of Aaron Rodgers. People hear that name, and I know it's been a rough go for him this season. 19 touchdowns to, I believe, 7 interceptions for Aaron Rodgers, but he still has a 93.2, you know, rating. His touchdown to interception ratio is 1.9, so he's still, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the league. It's just been a rough go without receivers. And he's probably not all that happy there right now. So all that plays into it. I'm sure if he was someplace happier, he'd be playing a little better. But at the end of the day, to your point, he's still Aaron Rodgers, and he can still make some things happen. As Christian Watson is now at, I'm trying to find it here. He's at Watson, 13.5 yards per reception after these last 2 weeks. Alan Lazard is at 13.9. So these guys, more than anything, when Aaron Rodgers finds them, it's more often than not, it's downfield for 30 yards. So the Eagles have to make sure that they don't get beat, because Aaron Rodgers has been killing defenses. When he has been effective, it's more so been downfield than in the intermediate game.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's if they can run the ball, they can set up play action shots. If the Eagles have to start overcommitting to the run, then that could be problematic. So this is one of those games where you definitely want your newfound running defense to work the way it's intended. Because if it doesn't, they're just going to keep running the ball until you overcommit. And then Rodgers wants to take his shots. He's always loved to push the ball downfield.
Over the first 6 weeks, Christian Watson's 10 catches for 88 yards. And then over the last 2 weeks alone, he seemingly broke out of that for 155 yards and 5 touchdowns. So it is that's kind of the one guy I've circled on my radar. Lazard has been the trust guy for Aaron Rodgers. He's one of the reliable ones. He has Randall Cobb, who's come back, and he does some damage out of the slot. But Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon are no slouches. Hopefully the debuts of Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph carry over into next week with another week of the playbook under their belts. And we're only 1 week away from Jordan Davis returning, hopefully, for the Titans. He's supposedly on track to return next week for the Titans when Derrick Henry comes to town, because after that, you got that three-game road stretch from that point. So you got to take advantage of these two home games while you have them, and further entrench yourself for that lead in the NFC.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a key game, especially because you expect the Titans game coming up the next week to be a tough one. So you can't let the Packers come in on a Sunday night on your home field with a division and a conference that's so tight. You can't let that game get away from you. So you go Green Bay, Tennessee, and then you've got New York, and then Chicago and Dallas. And so there's some.
Justin Fields is on fire. He is lighting it up as of late. Although so I know he's all hurt, injured, banged up so shoulder.
We'll see. Yeah. But.
Yeah, banged up shoulder.
So flipping over to the Packers defense, they primarily run a nickel 2-4-5 defense. They run that on 50% of their plays. So they're a 3-4 base defense. And then when they get into nickel, they take, two defensive linemen, they put two defensive ends on the line of scrimmage, and they rush that way. And they're pretty much in 3-4 or 2-4-5 almost every play. They play a lot of light boxes. So similar to the Eagles, who like to play light boxes, two high shell, nickel personnel, that's similar to what the Packers want to do. With the exception of they do a lot more post-snap spinning coverages, blitzing than the Eagles do. They blitz a lot. 41% of passing downs, they send a blitz. Nobody in the NFL blitzes more than the Green Bay Packers. Side note, the Giants blitz the second most in the NFL. So the Eagles have three games coming up in the next few weeks against the top two blitzing defenses in the NFL. So they will blitz a lot. Like I said, they start in two high shells, but they spin to one high coverages about 55% of the time. So they're rotating coverages. They're sending zone pressures, things like that, which, again, could be problematic for the Eagles. This is a game where the Eagles are going to want to be able to run the ball on early downs, because if you're not able to run the ball, if you get behind the sticks, all of a sudden you've got the Packers, whose defense hasn't been great, but they confuse things. They muddy the waters post-snap. They're going to send heat. They're not going to give you the same post-snap look that they gave you before the snap, and Jalen Hurts is going to have to be able to read all that out while pressure's flying in around him. So this strikes me as a run-heavy script game for the Eagles. They have not run the ball a ton the last 2 weeks. I think they get back to it a lot this week against the Packers.
Yeah, and they have linebackers, too, that can do some damage. Rashawn Gary is there, 6 sacks this year. Preston Smith, 5 sacks this year. So they got a couple guys who can get after the quarterback in those blitz looks that you mentioned. And can't forget about their corners either. Jaire Alexander, still a top corner in this league. I assume he'll be on A.J. Brown. And former Eagle and Rasul Douglas, who has made a name for himself in Green Bay after his rough start in Philadelphia. He had the sensational ending to the year last year. And he's been somewhat decent this year. He's only allowing a 73.4 passer rating. He has a couple touchdowns off some, I think, two pick sixes, actually. Both his interceptions have been pick sixes. So they have a couple guys. I know Eric Stokes is in the mix as well as far as cornerback. So they have guys that certainly get after the quarterback, and they have very good coverage guys as well. So it's going to be up to Steichen to scheme around that, because to your point, Jalen Hurts is going to have pressure around him. Is he going to remain status quo as last weekend rush, you know, use his legs to make these pass rushers pay? Or are they going to try and do what they did at the beginning of the season and try to scheme these guys open? Because for the most part, AJ and Devontae Smith, they beat their cornerbacks for the most part in this game. Devontae got what he wanted when he was targeted, and AJ did as well. Although AJ only had two targets in the second half for whatever reason. So, and he was off the field like on that 1-3 and out drive. Like he wasn't even on the field for that instance. So AJ Brown and Devontae Smith will have to take advantage of their matchups as well. But I'm intrigued to see how Steichen can beat the other blitz heavy Packers defense.
Yeah. And the Packers defense does have some injuries. Rashawn Gary's on IR right now. And I think Eric Stokes is going to be out for this game as well. So one of the things that forces the Packers to do is they've been keeping Jair Alexander out of the slot. They like to put him in the slot sometimes when they go into nickel personnel. So with Stokes out, they've been dropping Darnell Savage from safety into the slot and putting another name that Eagles fans will recognize in Rudy Ford in at safety mm-hmm. in their nickel packages. So
hey, he picked off Dak twice, didn't he, Rudy Ford?
Yes, yeah, picked off Dak twice. So you hate to see it, but. So I think the Eagles can throw on this. You know, the pass rush isn't going to be as scary with Gary out. The pass coverage isn't as good with Stokes out. It doesn't let them do what they want to do with Jair Alexander. They're all of a sudden they're having to drop a safety into the slot and all those sorts of adjustments they have to make. I think this is a team you can throw on. I just think it's a team that you would rather run on to try to take the teeth out of that blitz.
Yeah, let's hope that they're able to go ahead and get moving on that Packers defense. Try to make it to 10-1. Like we said, the Packers haven't done a whole lot of, not a whole lot of damage this year, but it's still Aaron Rodgers, and you still got to respect what he's done in the league and what he is still capable of, especially with Christian Watson now emerging and recording 5 touchdowns in his last 2 games. Shane, any other things you want to tap on for this Packers game before we go ahead and wrap this up?
Yeah, just that. We've talked about facing challenges heading into the playoffs, knowing that the Eagles didn't have the most difficult schedule. The Achilles heel of the offense early in the season was facing blitzes. And so it feels like they've gotten better against that. Like I said, 2 games against the Giants coming up. You've got the Packers, very blitz heavy teams. We're going to find out real fast if that's still an issue that they need to work on heading into the playoffs, or if that's been taken care of. So that's probably what I'm most fascinated to see in this game, is what the Eagles' answers to the blitz are offensively, especially in the dropback passing game.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be up to interesting to see how Jalen Hurts will be utilized this time around in this game. Appreciate you guys for taking a listen to the EPA podcast right here on Bleeding Green Nation. Be sure to subscribe, rate 5 stars, leave those reviews to help the exposure of BGN Radio. I'm your host, Victor Williams. Follow me at the Philly Pod on all social platforms. Shane, where can the people find you and all your past and upcoming projects that you got cooking up?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at halfandhalf_TPL. You can find my YouTube at ShaneHalfNFL. I've got a lot of All-22 video out this week. I put one out on the strip sack, what went wrong. I did a one about blitzing. I did one about the Eagles run defense. I did a game review for Josiah Scott, and I'm in the middle of a Jalen Hurts passing review that'll come out later today. So I put all those out on Twitter, but I'm limited to 2 minutes and 20 seconds. So I have to chop them up into pieces. So you can go to YouTube and you can skip that and you can just see the whole videos if you want. So give those a follow. You'll hear a lot of the information that I put out on this podcast, because the prep work is the same, but with a little more visual form. So you can check those out. And like I said, just keep it tuned to me on Twitter for everything else.
Hey man, you could have gave Elon the $8 so you can post like 10 minute videos, you know? Yeah, not worth it. Not worth it. Thanks guys for listening to the show. We'll be back with you guys next Wednesday, as always, to recap, hopefully another Eagles victory and hopefully a 10-1 record. This has been the EPA podcast, Eagles player analysis, with Victor Williams and Shane Half signing off. We'll catch you guys next week. Fly Eagles fly, baby.
Go Birds.